Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, April the 9th, 2019, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And tonight, we've got a range of topics. We are going to have an update on the Unanimous Is Not Enough and the struggle of the Louisiana United International Corporation. In addition to that, we're going to hit on, but not give too much attention to, the aftermath of the Smollett debacle. What it really means. It's more than just what's on the news. And last but not least, there are some incredible events that took place this weekend. And we're hoping that our sister, Ann Lamb, will be able to bring us up to date on one of them that took place in Philadelphia. In addition to that, we want to say hats off and give a big cheer for the Black is Black Coalition Conference held in Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida, this past weekend. It was phenomenal. And if you can, go to the Black is Black Coalition page, website page, and check out the speakers and the incredible speeches from people like Glenn Ford, of course, Chairman Yeshe Tele, of course, Cam Howard, the reparations guru. And let's not forget Mr. Baruti, dealing with people's elections. And that was the theme of the conference. We should be controlling these elections and directing these elections. Because if you vote and you do not get the benefit of your vote, that's like working and not getting the benefit of your labor, and that's called slavery. So this conference this weekend is putting an end to political slavery. Without further ado, we want to, the star, Charles Barron, knocked it out of the ballpark because we know he is one of our most experienced electoral campaign geniuses. So without further ado, we want to turn the microphone over to our brother, Ralph Pointer, and we want to send out a message of hang in there to brother Larry Pinkney. He is fighting the fight of the techie tonight. His computer is creating all kinds of challenges, and he is not able to call in on this evening, but he says not to worry. He will be back next week, but he's got to fight the fight to get his computer under control. Brother Ralph, the mic is yours.
Thank you, Sister Betty. My brothers and sisters, what I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. And the lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And now, in Sister Betty's introduction, she talked about going to a video of the Black is Back Coalition held in St. Petersburg over the weekend. But what she neglected to mention was a presentation by Sister Betty Davis that you must watch. It is education, education, education on top of education, which was the theme of this program and the theme of the event in St. Petersburg. And, of course, just plain Ralph had a few words to say at that convention also. Watch the video. You could watch it over and over and over again and learn something every time you watch it. Now, our theme is, what is the aftermath of the Smollett case? What's it really mean? May I remind everyone that the significance of the Smollett case, guilt or innocent, can be written in small print compared to the large print of the unequal treatment by descendants of those from Africa when confronted by the law. The reaction to the verdict by the police and the media is the telltale evidence of the intent of the system to guarantee that the descendants of Africans will not receive justice in or out of the courts. The enforcers of the system, the army of occupation, or as euphemistically called, the police, showed just who they are. And we must all keep in our minds the pictures of the police on their horses. After the verdict, whatever you think of the verdict was given to this artist, to this person who entertains us, opposing and showing their anger and willingness to show force against the system, that would brush him off as insignificant as he is. And right before that, we had a scandal of school admissions by artists and entertainers on the big screen and on the television screen. And the verdict, you know, wait and see if the police are out in force on their horses, showing their objection to whatever the verdict and whatever the penalties are handed out to these people. As I said, it's small print unless you compare it to the same army of occupation that in Chicago to watch, and I only watched it once, but it is imprinted on my mind, of the young man being shot repeatedly and spun in the air by police fire. And where are those indignant police? They're not to be found. They become mute. They have always become mute when it comes to the killings, the unnecessary killings of the young and old, of people, African descendants. The young man in Pittsburgh, the honor student a week from graduation, getting shot in the back while running away for fear of the police in a fender bender. And I could go over and over and over again the long list of injustices and what does it really mean. And as our dear sister Lynn Stewart said, when the people put on that uniform, black, white, or indifferent, they are members of the army of occupation. And she asked, when do policemen of color step forward to tell the truth about what has happened on these instances? Well, a few have done so. And the few who have done so have had to leave the police department, no matter what state or city they come from. But too few have opted to take this route. Too few have opted to write a book after their services to tell us all of the injustices. And we have to remember the injustices are exposed by the... I hope you can hear me out there. Could we get a response from those there? We see a disconnect here. Anyone out there, open up a mic, Betty. Can anyone hear what I'm saying?
I can hear you perfectly, Ralph.
Okay, so the computer is showing us something different. Okay,
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, let me continue. Where was I? The system shows itself over and over again in many instances where those in uniform have not come forward to speak of injustices. Our dear departed sister Lynn Stewart says, the solid blue line, we know what that means. They put on the uniform. They are members of the army of occupation. I would like to continue with this, but I keep getting the cut sign. But I will come back to that because the issue is what we can expect or what can we What can we justifiably expect from this system under our present condition of believing in the system? Thanks again, and Sister Betty, the mic is yours.
Okay, well, again, we want to acknowledge that our brother Tom is under the weather this evening, and he will not be checking in as usual. But we have the rest of our usual cast of characters, and we're going to honor Sister Lynn and her love of poetry by welcoming our poet in residence, Brother Raymond Nat Turner. Your mic is open. And I just want to add, we are experiencing a continuation of the difficulty we had last week on our computer. If you should certainly temporarily be shut off, please call back in. We're monitoring this situation, but please be aware to call back in. Brother Raymond, your mic is open.
Okay. I'm at the National Writers Union tonight, the meeting on Venezuela, solidarity with Venezuela is just concluded. And Sister Nellie Bailey was present, and she commented on the health status of our brother at Black Agenda Report, Bruce Dixon. So whatever your persuasion is, or, you know, keep him in your thoughts and, you know, send some kind words to him or whatever. He's got some serious health challenges at this point. So anyway, this piece is called Solidarity Sounds Like. I'm a soul man, da 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 da. I'm a soul man, da 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 da. I'm also a Pyongyang, Managua, Manila, Tehran man too, as opposed to despot, as I am to coup. When they go high, pole dancing palace and peacock throne, I go low on my own, grassroots, salt of the earth, looking here and there, searching everywhere for bleach, Windex, pine salt fence, janitors scrubbing toilets, mopping floors, looking for blue plumes of forklift fumes, pallets groaning in harmony with lunch bucket language of warehouse workers, looking for oily mist, machines birthing stainless steel parts on shop floors, listening for punch presses pounding parts out for machine tools, listening for squealing carts of library workers, listening for intercoms ordering nurses to stations, bells releasing teachers to lunch, looking to stand shoulder to shoulder with workers of the world. I'm a soul man, da 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 da. I'm a soul man, da 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 da. I'm also a Pyongyang, Managua, Manila, Tehran man too, as opposed to despot, as I am to coup. When they go high, pole dancing palace and peacock throne, I go low on my own, grassroots, salt of the earth, looking here and there, searching everywhere, listening for stiffening spine, rattling chain, leaping from guitars and marching to drums, looking for ruby banners and fiery pins, looking for actors, not dupes and dopes, dangling on dicks of dictators, kleptocrats, torturers, czars, like Negroes and liberals, angled from the drone ranger.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for that. And again, that is education through poetry. And the grassroots of the salt of the earth, as in the people of Venezuela, standing tough, standing strong against the imperialists from the north. And we will continue the program. We'll finish the program with the roots of the problem will be discussed around the issue of Louisiana United International, the 13th Amendment as related to Earl Victor in La Paz, Louisiana, and how does Ida B. Wells of actions against lynching, how does this all come together? And when we compare it with what the government is doing in the small case of the young man Smollett in Chicago, we will have barometers. We will have a measuring stick to decide and to decipher what the American government has in store for us. Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. I see there's another person who attended the Venezuela update. Sister Gwen, did you want to throw in a few words about the conference tonight? And I appreciate that you're calling because I know you were going to go to that conference.
And where is the operative? So please forgive me. I did not go. I hurt my back, and I decided to forego this conference tonight. So I didn't go, but I wanted to. So sorry about that. I can't share on that. I can only share what I feel about other things right now.
Okay, so then go ahead.
Okay.
Recognize we have two guest speakers that are going to be calling in. Do you want to listen to them and then comment on them afterwards, or would you like to go now?
I just have a couple of quick things to say. I just wanted to say that the measles outbreak tonight and these mandatory vaccines, I think, are really, really scary. I think if everybody, most of us probably got the measles, mumps, or chicken pox when we were little. And, you know, once you get them, you're immune for the rest of your life. So, you know, 350 people, they're saying, have it. But that means that 350 people will not get it again either. And if they're children, they're not at any kind of significant risk. So I think that these mandatory vaccines are very scary. I myself have an autistic nephew, and I can tell you it has basically ruined my sister's and her husband's life because the care for an autistic child is unbelievable, just unbelievable. And I remember my sister telling me that after she got the vaccine is when these changes happened, and the same thing with my friend Suzanne. Autism is on the rise. I never even heard of autism when I was in school. I never even knew what it was until the 1990s. So I don't think this has been around, not like this anyway, if it was around, for that long. And I do think that there are real, true ties to the pharmaceuticals. And it's a disgrace that parents are not allowed to get the real and true information in this country. One out of every 10 boys in New Jersey that is being born today will be born with autism, and that's really scary stuff. So that was one thing. The other thing I wanted to say was changes at WBAI are also really, to me, upsetting. There's a new person who has a show named Ben Max, and I'm not saying this to throw mud on anybody. I'm just saying that Ben Max is a huge operative in the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party, which is more Hillary-esque than anything else, he is the one who hosts all of the city council debates. He often sits on panels, like he did for the seat for the public advocate. And I'm not sure that I really think this is the right person or a very good fit for the station WBAI, which I find really troubling that BAI is moving further and further to the right. Tom Hartman, to me, is not that interesting either. And it's really happening quickly, and it's happening with a real methodical twist behind it. So we're losing a source that we've really relied on for years for really good information we couldn't find anywhere else. And just feels like all the walls are closing down. And I guess my last comment tonight is that if anyone heard, I'm sure you all did hear, the President Trump this morning speaking on immigration, how frightening it was to hear his thoughts, and that his latest idea is, like they did in The Children in Sophie's Choice, is to make parents choose whether they want this child or whether they want to put the child into a cage and have them be held while they try to go through immigration. He's also lying, saying that our country is full. We are not full. We're not anywhere near full. And all of the things that are happening to people, basically, as you all know, are things that are happening to them because of our policies in the United States. And I guess the last thing is, I don't know how many people heard it, the show on Guns and Butter this week, but I do think that there's even more to the story in Venezuela that we haven't heard, and I just am interested in fleshing out all aspects of this conversation. I do listen to Bonnie Faulkner. I do think she's very interesting. And she had a fellow on that was talking about the China connection in terms of Venezuela. And I really can't remember the specifics of it, but it was quite interesting. And I do think that it's worth us having a conversation about. I'll try to get more information and re-listen to it and share it with you all next week. But I know that, I was down at least the first protests, and I'm very, very opposed to anything happening in Venezuela, any bombing of that country. I know that we are all like that. But I think that Venezuela is being closed in from lots of different places, and they're in a really precarious position right now. So there are a few of the thoughts on my mind tonight, and I will sit back and listen to the rest of you, and I thank you for this time.
Thank you so much for your contribution. As we say, this program is about information, 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 and we may have more information on Venezuelan situation, but our next speaker will go to the root of this American problem and with people of the descendants of Africans.
I would like to add that one of the things people who are progressive in this country say is that we are opposed to wars both at home and abroad. The same war they are waging on the people in Venezuela, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Iran,
right.
They are Palestine, Haiti, they are waging against us in the United States. And the story of the struggle to resist fascism abroad is very similar to the struggle to resist racism in America. Our current speaker will be Joe Perry, with a long record as a newspaper person, reporter, advocate for liberation, and a supporter of Louisiana United, a real Chicago activist. Brother Perry, your mic is open.
Okay, yes, thank you. Thank you, Sister Better, for having me. I just want to point out, too, I'm also a member of Louisiana United. Unanimous is not enough. They actually recruited me. I went down there to cover the story and they end up like joined. So I joined. But
wonderful.
Anyway, right, fantastic. And look, I look upon myself as being an educated person, knowledgeable and all that. But I gotta tell you that ever since I've been doing this story and been involved in this story, by the way, we're gonna have something in the People's Tribune every time, updates and what have you, on this story. But I consider myself very, very well educated, and yet the more that you dig, the more you find out how much we don't know as Americans, all of us. Pen-2 is a law that got overturned in this last election in Louisiana in November by 2-1, because people understood what it was. It was very unpopular. I mean, what they're doing is they're arresting black men and throwing away the key. Putting him in penitentiary. So when I started to cover the story, I wanted to look it up. So I look up the original law. The original law came out of Louisiana Constitutional Convention, 1898. And what they said in that convention, that they said a lot of things, but you know, something new that I haven't told everybody that they said. This is the words of one of the people involved, that they were looking to remove the Negro from every democratic process that goes on in that state. And that included voting. That included being on juries. That included any and everything. That was what they were out to do, and they felt like that's what they did. Now, in spite of us having a civil rights movement, this law still persisted way past civil rights, and it goes all the way back to slavery. And so as I began to look, and I read the law, went and read it, it was pretty obvious that the way they worded it, that if you were going to be convicted of a crime and the punishment was hard labor, you're going to get a 9-3. It was originally 9-3, not 10-2. It just means that 9 racist whites on a jury, which they could ensure and do, could outvote anybody else that was on that jury, and you become convicted, you go to jail, you're a slave. And so I go on and look at the 13th Amendment, went back and looked at that, and you see where the 13th Amendment says that slavery and involuntary servitude are abolished except if you're convicted of a crime. You know, and so I started asking myself, how many black folks were locked up prior to that? Nope, not very many. After that, a lot. They spent a whole century and a half criminalizing blacks to get blacks locked up and so they could throw away the key, you know, and have people literally in jail like Mr. Victor for crimes they have not committed. And, you know, they're getting life. They're getting 40 to life, whatever. But it's about profit. And, you know, I don't know if the other folks had the same experience I did in school, but as a kid, I was taught that there wasn't slavery anymore. The 13th Amendment got rid of slavery. The 13th Amendment didn't get rid of slavery. All it did was transform it. And so now all these same corporations that want to go to war in down in Venezuela, those are the same corporations that are doing business behind the walls in these penitentiaries where slavery now exists, and they're the new slave masters. And they're the ones that, for instance, you can't get a job, say, from one of these folks in your own neighborhood, but after you're locked up and thrown in jail, you now got a job as a slave getting paid anywhere from zero to maybe 15, 20, who knows, cents an hour. And not only that, but, you know, there's a lot of folks that if you Google this sort of thing, just ask how many people are coming out of jail owing, who are in debt owing. They're making people, they are revitalizing this thing of you're locked up, you got to pay for your being locked up. I read in Ohio, there are people who are coming out of jail in Ohio that are being charged $50 a day for their stay in jail. And if you don't pay it back, you're locked back up. How much in your face do they have to be that what they're interested in doing is slavery? And I think what we have to do is look at the fact that at a moment in time where robots and computers are taking over people's jobs, especially people who, you know, get a lot of money for their jobs and people that are well-trained, you know, tool and die makers, machinists, this sort of thing, pattern makers, they're all being replaced by a robot and computer. But ask yourself, how do you compete? You can't compete with a robot, but guess what? If you're a slave behind them bars, you can compete because guess what? They don't pay no Social Security. They're not paying no medical. They're not paying nothing. And when you get out of there, you're owing. So there's a bigger chance for you to get locked back up. And so Louisiana has challenged this racism, has challenged this slavery by voting out the 10-2 law back in November. And they need to get support from the rest of the country. But how do people know to support it? They don't even know about it. They got to get the word this sort of thing is going on. And I submit to you that once people understand what's going on in Louisiana, they see Louisiana is like the worst case of what is going on all over the country, that no matter what state you're going to, there's slavery behind the penitentiary walls going on, and there's a whole lot of, corruption in order to get people locked up. You know, I'm sure that one of the callers is going to have to talk, but the thing that really hit me with this Victor case was when they got the coroner to change the coroner's report so that they ensure he gets locked up, because the first trial that he went to, you know, the judge threw it out. So, you know, the child died of asphyxiation from asthma. Well, they go and they get the coroner to change the coroner's report, and they bring him back to jail and make sure he gets locked up. Oh, my God. Crazy. So you got 2,000 people in Louisiana still locked up that have been convicted under this 10-2 law. and they're going to stay locked up because the until we the people in America get them out of there. Why? Because all these corporations in the United States government is not going to let go of them folks. They're making too much money off of them. They're not going to let them go. And so it's up to us, the American people, to, one, take up the fight for what's going on in Louisiana. But start looking at your own state and your own area where you're at. You're going to find the same things going on.
Well, thank you so much for that, Joe Perry and Peary. Thank you so much for that. And we have to realize the connection between prison operation and college debt money for the same corporation. And why are we saying Louisiana is where we must attack this problem? Because Louisiana is where the root of the problem festered in the extreme the longest. Congo Square, Angola, plantations, and auctions for slavery. And we must remember what Ida B. Wells was talking about in the early part of the century, when she was talking about the lynching of successful black businessmen all over the South. So our next speaker will tell us, Mr. Robert Taylor, of Louisiana, New Orleans, is going to talk about the case of Earl Victor. Mr. Taylor, are you on? And if I've been reminded, and whatever else you want to speak about. Mr. Taylor, your mic is open.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and have people hear about our situation down here. Louisiana obviously is notorious in this disregard for the human rights of descendants of Africans. Not only did we have to suffer with this non-unanimous jury rigged up system that they put in place and let it run right on into the 21st century, they actually came back in 1974 and ratified that with the same horrific language and intent and results. Louisiana has the highest rate of incarceration in the entire world. Black men are incarcerated. Black males, teenagers are frequently tried as adults so that they can go directly into the slave camps of the state penitentiary system that's called Angola. In the case of Mr. Victor, a successful 42-year-old businessman, family man, never been in trouble with the law in his life, raising 13 boys, not on welfare. None of his boys were gangbangers. They were all involved in his business. Five of the boys was the result of his second marriage. He unfortunately lost his first wife. It was one of these boys who was suffering from an inherited malady. His mother has this respiratory disease, whatever it is. He spent his first 3 or 4 months after birth in the hospital because of that. Well, One of the attacks of it resulted in his death. He was 9 years old. And that gave, obviously, these people an opportunity to stop Mr. Victor in his business endeavors, which conflicted plans that the powers that be in that area had. St. John of Baptist Parish is which is equal to counties everywhere itself. It's about 25 miles upriver from New Orleans. We are also considered a part of the New Orleans metropolitan area, but I was born there. It's always been an agrarian community, sugar cane and the sugar mills. But when the petrochemical industry came into play, things began to change in the parish. Populations shifted and gerrymandered, and in order to fight the civil rights laws that came into place, something all of us are familiar with, white flight took place, and they began to reshuffle to try and maintain Jim Crow. And they were very successful at it. The evidence of that is bright, blatantly in your face. The parish, because of white flight, is now 58% black, about 47,000 people. And when you look at the St. John the Baptist Parish public school system, during my era in the 60s, it was segregated. The public schools were black and the other one was white. Today, in 2019, the St. John the Baptist Parish public school system is 90 to 95% black. It's just as segregated as it was 60 years ago, prior to all of this integration stuff that went on, because these people have no intent, not one inkling toward accepting us as their peers and living together with us. Although we're still, it seems to me, we're still foolishly chasing after this integration silliness. These people are totally segregationists. Our new president, well, not new, but the latest one, is evidence of, if this country could elect an out-and-out racist like Trump, if these white women could vote for a chauvinist like him who bragged about sexually assaulting them, when he brags about grabbing women their private, that's sexual assault. When I think about what happened to that 14-year-old guy in Mississippi in the 50s, because they said he whistled at a white woman, this guy brags about sexually assaulting women, and white women voted for him in great numbers. They put him in office. But they put Mr. Cosby at 80 years old in prison. They're trying to do the same thing with the younger guys. They're trying to tear up everything that Michael Jackson ever did. But not to wander too far from our subject. It's just, to me, it's just heart-rendering to me that we as a people have not matured enough to see who our enemies are and to come together, fight our enemies, to draw the circle and defend ourselves. I mean, I see women being beat like an animal by white men and not a black man stand up to defend her. I see 16-year-old black girl in a two-piece swimsuit. I know she don't weigh 100 pounds. And I see this policeman in his jack boots and bulletproof vest throwing her on the ground and kneeling in her back. In the world, it's fine. And I know it's fine with white people, but it's fine with black people. Because not a voice is raised. Nothing is done about the complete disrespect, the disregard they have for our people and our women and children. To shoot a 12-year-old down, I mean, it's unthinkable. Unless it's a black 12-year-old, then oh yeah. Anybody convicted of that crime? Is it a crime? In America, blacks are fair game. These madmen who they put police powers in their hands, they give them a badge and a gun, and they just go out and just murder people. I cannot understand the madness going on in Chicago about some Jussie Smollett or whatever, and about the horrible, all the car. Is this the same Chicago where this man shot this boy 16 times and the mayor and all the people in that city hid it for a whole year? And that cop ran around bragging like they all do and getting paid. And now they're making this mess because this DA found no reason to charge this man. They're bringing everybody to bear on that black woman. What about that boy they shot down in the street like an animal? What kind of monster was that that shot that boy and was reloading his gun? And we know America is full of those people. And that blue line that they're talking about, it is... It does not matter. I hear something about there are some good cops, and I know that there are black cops. Where are they? Where are the good cops? I've been hearing this all my life. I was 14. I was the same age with that boy in Mississippi who they killed, and his very courageous mother forced the whole world to look at his corpse, wouldn't let him close his coffin. Scared me to death. It was about 90 miles from where I live. That kind
well,
of stuff
thank you.
All my life, man.
Well, thank you, Mr. Victor. Mr. Taylor. I am in awe and proud of you for standing up from where you are in the belly of the beast in Louisiana to speak out. You don't get enough of speaking out. And I wanted to mention, when I had said about Ida B. Wells stopping lynching of successful black men in the South because of their success, nothing else, today or before they can, Mr. Earl Victor, they did a docudrama of actors on television that portrayed Mr. Victor violently beating his child, which
that
is
was the national
extremely
news. The national news media did that. Man hadn't been convicted of anything. They found another black man that looked just like him and put this show nationally on the air with him brutally beating a young child.
And nothing that ever happened. And this shows you the extent of this corruption of the political and the media, the courts and the media, to do evil towards our progress. And so I salute you, Mr. Taylor, for being where you are and doing the work you do. And I do look so forward to being there with you to continue this struggle for justice in Louisiana. Sister Betty.
We just want
thank
to say
you,
to Brother Robert Taylor, we thank you for calling in. We know that your family is suffering the effects of these corporations, especially the petrochemical companies' impact on the environment. Members of your family are suffering with the illnesses caused by this lack of accountability to the community in Louisiana. And so we appreciate you taking the time to call in. And we want to say to you and Brother Peary, please, please call in any Tuesday and give us updates on the progress of Louisiana Unanimous's fight to stop the incarceration and to free the 2000, the New Orleans Angola 2000. So please feel free to call in at any time.
And we're looking to change that history that down there and to make a positive history. And people hang in there because we've added another half hour to the program, and so you will have opportunity to speak. Thanks, my brother. Next up, Sister Ann Lamb.
We want to say that that is the problem. We are analyzing the problem, but we have the solution. And Sister Ann Lamb is the head of the New York City Jericho, and that is the solution to the problem. When people wage war against you, you have to wage war back by any means necessary. And Jericho is one of our organizations that will free our political prisoners and prisoners of war. And I know Sister Ann, if she was away in Philadelphia, has a lot to say. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Betty. Always an honor and a privilege to be on this program. Yes, Philadelphia was not so filthy this weekend. Michael Africa Sr. and Debbie Africa had decided, after 40-plus years of being separated, that they would like to have a beautiful wedding. And so they had a beautiful wedding to which we had the honor of being invited. And I can tell you it was so uplifting, and a room so full of love. There were about 300 people there, many of whom, of course, were family of either Debbie or Mike or both. People came all the way from Texas for this wedding. It was really amazing. Debbie was just glowingly beautiful. Michael Africa Sr. looked like he could be on the cover of GQ in a beautiful three-piece dark blue suit. And it was just beautiful. Debbie's two children, Mike and his older sister, Whit, gave her away. So that was really nice. One of their little granddaughters was a flower girl. And the beautiful wedding cake was homemade by the Move family. And it is just gorgeous. You would never think that it was something that people made at home. I said, wow, these people are talented, right? So it was really, really beautiful. It was very moving. You know, some of us were in tears, of course, just because we were so happy. You know, an extremely uplifting event. And, you know, really was wonderful. And we also got a chance. We didn't get to see Ramona Africa, but we did speak with Ramona on the phone. She's doing way better, right? And she did have some wonderful news to impart, because in addition to the major stroke, the doctors had also told her that she had cancer, and they did a full body scan, and there is no cancer to be found anywhere in her body. So that's fantastic news that I just heard yesterday. And she's planning to do an event along around Mother's Day. That should be wonderful, you know, thanking all her supporters and everything for, you know, helping to support her through this illness. She's recovering really well because, of course, the Move family, she's part of them. And even though the insurance, you know how medical insurance can be, oh, we don't have any more coverage for physical therapy, even though she needs more, right? So they're making sure every day they go by, they take her out for walks. You know, now she's walking with the walker. She's starting to walk with just a cane. She sounded fantastic on the phone. So, you know, looking forward to that. That will be at some point in the middle of May, as you know, around Mother's Day, which is also the anniversary of the bombing of MOVE, of which Ramona is the only adult survivor, and for which she went to prison. Nobody who bombed that house and killed 11 people went to prison, but Ramona Africa had to go to prison. I don't know what her crime was surviving, right? You know, that often happens. So, yeah, but the wedding was just beautiful. There's a lot of beautiful pictures. If people go on Facebook and just Google Mike Africa Jr., you know, they'll on Facebook, just put in his name. You'll see pictures there. Our friend Joe Piet from the Philly International Action Center took some beautiful shots. He's a really great photographer. Of course, they had a professional, you know, videographer and all that. So I'm sure that in the future, those of us who couldn't be there can probably watch it. So that'll be really nice, something to look forward to. I also just want to remind people, about Imam Jamil Al-Amin, right? There will be oral arguments for Imam Jamil Al-Amin down at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is in Atlanta, Georgia, on May 3rd. And this hearing is to determine whether or not he will receive a new trial, right? So they're trying to pack the courtroom. So if you know any people in Atlanta, or if you can get to Atlanta on that day, probably would be in the morning, I would advise people to, you know, definitely go. They would love to see a lot of support. They were doing also a fundraiser, but I just went there and they say it's been closed. But anyway, for whatever reason, you know, which I don't know. But very importantly, that we make sure that we get that courtroom packed, tell all your friends and comrades, you got anybody working in any organizations in Atlanta. I know Atlanta is a very black city. I've been there. So, you know, if you know many people there, let them know, you know, so that they can, you know, organize locally. And then we can organize, you know, a little bit more not locally, just by at least putting out the news and letting people know. Definitely try to be there that day so we can see if he will get a new trial or not, which would be fantastic after all these years. Man is in very bad health. He has some form of cancer that I can't remember even the name of, but it sounds horrible. And, you know, if you've ever been in prison, you know that medical care is like an oxymoron, you know. So despite the fact that they violate the U.S. Constitution by not providing adequate medical care, they don't provide adequate medical care. You could be there dying, and they'll just, you know, well, they did that already to Mao Min. Mao Min has 10% capacity in his lungs, and he's got an oxygen tank. And so one day they just decided they would step on the tube so he couldn't breathe. Yeah, these kinds of things go on all the time. So, you know, very nasty stuff. And as we were talking about slavery, yes, it's true. Slavery exists every day in every prison in the United States of America. That is a big profit-making thing for them. They are making money hand over fist. As my friend Jaleel Muntakim says, let's see how long my shelf life is, 77A4283, right? We're a commodity. So, you know, it's true. And, you know, nobody gets paid well. Our friend Bill Dunn, who is probably one of the highest paid people in the federal system because he's a teacher and all that, he makes less than $600 a year. All right, a year. And he's one of the most highest paid prisoners. So you can imagine what other people are getting paid or not getting paid, you know, for the work that they do. And, you know, it's really appalling. And so, you know, there's a lot to fight here. But, you know, we did have good news so far last year. We pulled out 4 political prisoners, including Mike and Debbie with 2 of them. And so, you know, this is wonderful. And as Ramona says, we're on a roll and we're going to continue, you know, on a move until we free them all. So that's what we are busy trying to do, and we would love to have people join us, because the more people who are doing this work, the less arduous it will be for the rest of us, and the more likely we will achieve victory sooner rather than later. We don't want any more of our comrades dying behind those walls. I will tell you, that is so difficult to have to deal with when a loved one dies behind the walls for no reason other than the fact that they get these endless sentences. And even after you've done all your time, you're still told you have to do double that. And then even then, we might possibly think about letting you out, but it's not guaranteed. So, you know, it's really appalling. And you want to talk about fascism, that's what we're in. So, you know, George Jackson said it a long time ago, and he was right. So, you know, we see this building of fascism happening every day in this country, and we really need to be out there fighting it every day in every way that we can by any means necessary. So I just
Thank
say,
you.
What's the call? Freedom all.
Thank you so much for that, Ann Lamb, and I'm glad to hear of a happy moment to be reported on this blog. And how many years were they separated? Would
well,
you repeat that?
They were in prison for more than 40 years.
Oh, my God. Well,
so, you
thank
know,
you so much.
It's beautiful to see when they were putting out, you know, the little invitations and all for the wedding. They had a little trifold that had a picture of them at their high school prom. Right?
Oh.
So, you know, they were meant to be together, you know, that's for sure. At their high school prom, and you see Debbie at high school prom and Mike at Debbie's high school prom. And then you see them now, and despite all of their hardships and despite, you know, 40 years of incarceration, they look fantastic, both of them.
Okay,
you know?
Well,
they
thank you so
fantastic.
Much. And let people tell people again how they can get this information from the Jericho website. Spell it out for us.
Well, the Jericho website is thejerichomovement.com. We don't have anything up there yet on this information. JerichoNY.org is our local website. But if you just go to put in Michael Africa Jr., who is their son, he's already posted some pictures and a small report of this wedding. And we will be putting it out as well in the Jericho newsletter, which should be out by the end of the week. And we'll be
Thank you so
around.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Sister Ann, We hope that you can hang in there. I know you're tired, but I wonder if you have Brother Woodfox's book, and you could read an excerpt from it toward the end of the program. We want to push that book. And we also want to say to the people from Louisiana United, it's this kind of struggle that we can wage to free the Angola 2000. Without further ado, we want to call in our resident scholar and attorney, Sister Reva Entine, and she's going to give us some information about her Follow the Money. Sister Reva, thank you for hanging in there. Your mic is open. And Brother Joel, we're looking forward to a real discussion from you that will link up all these threads tonight. Please hang in there with us. Sister Reva, your mic is open.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. I wish I had something more uplifting after that discussion about the beautiful wedding. And I don't think I'm a scholar. I'm an editor, and I edited this book of 66 interviews all under Obama when things were not so great. And this one, so they're not dated, is why the book Follow the Money is still relevant. This one I'm going to read some from. It's from September 2015. It's called Systemic Solutions for the Global Refugee Crisis. And it's about a woman who just came back from Budapest, Deborah Rogers, where she was in the middle of that whole train station refugee crisis. And she actually studies the refugee crisis. All right. And basically, she's asked by Dennis Bernstein, forced migration is a global problem. The responsibility lies in the West, in imperialism, which forces people off their land. And she says, I have this image of the U.S. standing on the sidelines, holding their breath, hoping nobody will look at them and ask, what is your role and what do you plan to do? In Europe, there are a few flashpoints. Hungary, of course, is one, and another is Greece. The whole process to request asylum has broken down. About 30,000 people are crammed onto these two islands, no toilets, no place to sleep. They are lying on sidewalks and parking lots. But this is not just a European problem. It's a global crisis. Currently, there are a record-breaking 60 million, that's 60 million, displaced people around the world. In June, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees reported that one out of every 122 people on Earth is forcibly displaced. The U.S. can't just stand by and watch, saying, let Europe handle it, and make a few token gestures like taking in a few Syrians. All right. Then she goes, everyone is predicting that this, and again, this is a couple of years ago, but there's going to be a postscript. Everyone is predicting that this refugee crisis is not just a flash in the pan. They may just keep going because there's almost an endless supply of these conflicts and reasons why people are driven out of their homes. All right, so she does an update like 6 months later, and I'll end with this, and it's just sobering. But this update is still just January 2016. Again, this is all under Obama. All right, all of these developments raise serious questions about the ability of the global north to deal with refugees and other consequences of its self-interested interference around the world. The mindset underlying the anti-refugee backlash is the same as that underlying the exploitative actions that drive the conflicts generating refugees. A pervasive sense by people in the West that they are somehow separate from and superior to non-Western others. If we don't want the refugee crisis to continue to go from bad to worse, we must quit demonizing, recognize our common humanity, address our culture's shared failings, such as endemic violence and sexism, and move towards non-exploitative economic and political relationships. And I'll drink to that. So all power to the people. Thank you all for having me join you.
Thank you so much. And that last sentence, refrain from exploitative relationships. That is not the capitalist way to refrain. The capitalist way is to continue with exploitive relationships. They call it imperialism. And
tell them how they can get the book, Reva.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So, yeah, I'd like to say, of course, you can get it on Amazon, but we should not buy anything on Amazon. So you can buy it for 20% off at Lulu. That's L-U-L-U. And it's Follow the Money. It is still relevant because, again, they were all under Obama, so I call it the writing on the wall for how we got here. And a reality check, because everybody's acting like, you know, Obama's the best thing ever and all the problems started under Trump. And everybody on this call knows the problems didn't start under Trump. But many of our friends, as you know, seem to think that all we have to do is get rid of Trump and it'll all get better. And we all know that's not true.
Yes, you hit the nail on the head, and it can't be said too often. And with that in mind, as one of the programs that we had last year was when we said, as W.E.B. Du Bois said, racism will be the main problem in the 20th century. We said racism and migration will be the problem in the 21st century. And everybody knew it and everyone can see it, but very few people acted to do anything against it, as against this forced migration, as in Honduras. When we saw the coup coming, the left did not have enough forces or enough intent to stop it. We see the American attempt in Venezuela. The left does not have enough forces or intent to stop it. We saw it in Haiti. We saw it in Chile. We see it over and over and over again, until we are able, as in the left jargon, to mobilize forces to say no, it will continue. And so it is a problem that will go on and on.
Before we go to Brother Joel, I want to give you some statistics that we got from Amnesty International as to where the Syrians are going. 3,636,617 of them went to Turkey. That's 3,636,617. 252,526 went to Iraq. 948,849 went to Lebanon. 671,551 to Jordan. 132,871 to Egypt. That's the ones they could count. We're not talking about the ones who are dead as a result of this genocide that's going on all over the world.
And one of the areas of conflict that is expanding is again in Libya with American troops. This thing goes on and on, this imperialist demand for control of the world. Sister Betty.
Brother Joel, your mic is open. Thank you for waiting.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Very clearly.
Oh, okay. Sometimes this phone doesn't act the way it's supposed to. So anyway, I'm glad that I get through. It's been a really fabulous discussion tonight. Although it wasn't the one that was introduced. There was people were going to be speaking about the Jussie Smollett case. And, for example, and there are so many other things going on, but what is emerging from all these different things is the total inability to believe anything that the media says, or even fathom out the meaning of what it actually says, not just on the basis of how things are interpreted ideologically, how things are spun, as they put it, but on the facts themselves. There is such a wide disparity within the media itself about the different perspectives major stories where you would think that there could be some resolution, at least on the basic facts, and yet there are so many absurd contradictions and outright gaps. It's almost impossible to fathom what's going on, even even broad outlines. And I think Jussie Smollett case is a one very good example. Another thing that's in the news now, this whole controversy about the Mueller Commission investigating Trump. Supposedly, you had a top FBI investigator, very experienced in all kinds of cover-ups, frame-ups, scandals of various types, and so on, emerging from the depths, mainly apparently of the FBI, put forward by the Justice Department to investigate what was supposed to be, of course, everybody knew Trump is nothing but a puppet of Putin, right? And we know that the evidence is supposedly plainly in sight, undeniable, irrefutable, and this commission, not just the one person, Mueller, but this whole investigative commission now has worked for a year and a half, and they've come up, at least on the basis of actual collaboration between Trump and the Russian government, they've come up with, apparently with not a shred of what they've been drumming into our heads. And what even somebody as biased as Mueller, a Russophobe from who knows how far back, that there's not one even small part of it that's been authenticated. And the worst of the media in that particular case has been the New York Times, which you know, supposedly they're the ones that are supposed to at least make a show of being interested in actual facts and some kind of reasoning. They're not supposed to be like the New York Post or the National Enquirer. They've been the ones fanning this entire thing and convincing everyone, despite the fact that they can't point to any, that the evidence is just overwhelming. And now they're extremely disappointed. They sort of know that they were lying all along, because let's say that they really even believed themselves, not just that they were cynically lying about it and trying to incite people, but let's say that they really believed that the Russian government and its intelligence agencies had planted an actual agent and puppet in the White House who gets all the top secret briefings and who's in a position to, let's say, to do a lot of damage. I want to make it clear, I'm not into defending the United States of imperialism or the United States of, we shouldn't call it America because that's the unofficial name, but whatever it is, I'm not defending imperialism, and I'd even be a little bit happy if something like that could have actually taken place, that the imperialists were severely disrupted at the very top of their system, and that that the forces that did it were working for the only power in the world that, I shouldn't say the only, but the one that can say a powerful no and has said powerful no's at a certain time, could actually have that much influence and be able to manipulate the American election from the outside, using a number of what they're alleged to have done was a number of election websites that told people to vote for Trump or against Hillary Clinton. I mean, and they fanned that up into an entire hysteria. Now, let's say that they really believed that. Do you think that they would allow such a situation to just exist while they drone on and on with an investigation that, like, we'll go after the we'll go after sidekicks and so on, and we'll put pressure on them and get them to after a few months or a few years, rat out the big fish, and then maybe we'll indict them, and maybe he'll resign then. Is this really how it would be handled? I mean, they killed people like the Rosenbergs or JFK for less. The one with a germanically engineered fraud and execution, the other one with an outright assassination, then unanimously covered up by all major factions. They took them out, and they're telling us, oh, he's a Putin puppet, and we're going to catch him maybe after his re-election in another 4 years or something like that. We'll get him, and we'll put enough pressure on him to resign. And by the way, the glee with which a lot of, especially liberals, I have to say, have gone along with the whole narrative that they're going to get his family, they're going to get his sidekicks, they're going to prosecute them until they rat. It sounds like that's a way to really get the truth out of people, that you tell them that you're going to be in prison for the rest of your life unless you rat this person out with information that we will gladly supply to you to say, and we'll let you off a little bit easy. And the whole idea of bringing an open police state investigation into the results of an election, and I'm not saying that I support those results either, but the very structure of police state veto over the election, and the especially the liberals, because they feel disappointed that power didn't roll to them in this particular cycle, and we don't know, again, what's legitimate. We don't have any reason to believe any of the numbers or figures that were given out in this election. We saw what happened to Bernie Sanders right in the Democratic Party. We saw how hundreds of thousands of people in New York City were denied the vote in the crucial presidential primary right here. So we don't have any reason to believe that Trump was actually elected or what the popular vote is. We have, because what we're listening to are, as I started to say, unfathomable liars. People that conduct this kind of an investigation with no basis that even the Mueller Commission can announce. Not one thing, and they're still saying, well, it's because the Attorney General is distorting the real content. We want to see that thing. We want to know what's in it, and so on. And basically, they already know what is not in it. It was not what they were looking for. It was not it was not something. And the part of that is that it's not only that they were wrong, but they're going to be extremely discredited from now on, because, as I say, they were, and another way that you know that they're lying is that in their denials about what is not in the report, they're attacking the Attorney General William Barr. They're not saying that Mueller sold us out. They're not saying that he was the one that covered up everything. They're saying that he wrote somehow some kind of truth, and that Barr that Barr is covering up by citing direct quotes from the report. And by the way, those parts where it said that there is no evidence of collusion are direct quotes from the report. It wasn't like Barr said, I read it and I didn't find anything like that. It's direct quotes that Mueller wrote. And yet Mueller is still being held up as some kind of a paragon of not just the knowledge, but that they are still at the same time claiming to have knowledge that Mueller says he couldn't find. He looked high and low and far and wide. He has the experience. He has the anti-Russian bias, and yet there's nothing. So it shows how once again we've been sold a bill of goods. Now, in the Jussie Smollett case, we have the same kind of a thing. We have narratives about what happened or what didn't happen that are so widely disparate that it's almost impossible to figure out what even the basic facts are, and that alone is more important than what the basic facts would be in that individual case. The fact that there's just no we're getting narratives that are so irreconcilable and so absurd taken together that you can see again how the media have reached a certain crisis in that I guess many liars in complicated situations eventually reach, that they sort of can't maintain touch with all the different tranches of lies that they've put out, with the lies contradicting each other and demanding more and more lies to defend any of the narratives. And I think that the overall effect of it at this point is that a vacuum is being created. I don't like to use the phrase because it's been popularized by one of our major enemies, Donald Trump, but fake news, it really sums it up. That's what I don't even know if you can call it news. It's fake. We know that it's fake, but whether you could call something like that news is not. The efforts to conform to the interests of a tiny handful of billionaires and to manipulate the broad public, all in the name of democracy. This is supposedly a free press that we have. When the Bill of Rights was incorporated into the Constitution as a set of amendments, it wasn't even in the organic original Constitution, but there was a lot of public pressure and fear of governmental corruption and so on, tyranny, and of course there was the real. What was ignored was any of the liberties weren't really used to the full extent was to discuss the real atrocities, like the ongoing genocide against the native peoples and racial slavery at the center of the economy when cotton was king, and when that slavery was generating such an enormous surplus that not only was capitalism consolidated in the United States, but also in all the earlier capitalist countries in Europe that became the leading imperialists before the U.S. took over their empires at the end of World War II. So this is what was really going on, and yet we were supposed to have a free press. And we see very little coverage. If you go back to any of the major newspapers of the day, you'll see very little coverage of these outrages that are taking place before our eyes. But anyway, in the best hypocrisy of the world, we were supposed to have a free press. And I believe that probably some of the press at that time is significant. Portion was made up of people that were highly enlightened and skeptical of governance, and who wanted to be a watchdog, and who saw how the governance previous to that openly treated the watchdogs, you know, like they had a law called seditious libel. It meant that if you said things that were unfavorable to the king, and you could be prosecuted for that. It didn't matter whether it was the truth. That was not an allowable defense. It was the law was under the Public Order Act, and people might have heard of Robert Peter Zenger, who was prosecuted for seditious libel, and the judge would determine whether the alleged utterances were libelous against the state and could cause disorder, and then the jury can only determine whether the person uttered that was the state of the laws, and the Bill of Rights represents pressure to change that so that the media would be protected. At that time, there was only print media and maybe word of mouth. There was no radio, TV. But the problem is that today we have a media which is nothing but an arm of the government, and in a way the most important arm of the government, because it manipulates public opinion so that any time a country is targeted, a country that never did anything. Like when you look at the Vietnam, I remember the Vietnamese people, Vietnam as a country, had never thrown a pebble at the United States on speeches or anything else. And yet the liberation struggle there against the French colonialists, it was depicted as, a struggle supposedly in the American tradition of decolonization and independence of countries from imperialist exploiters and oppressors like the French. For example, the Vietnamese were demonized from the beginning. And you can look this up. Richard Nixon conveyed, as Vice President of the United States, an offer to use nuclear bombings to break the encirclement of Dien Bien Phu, which was a French-held area there that was the collapse of which and the defeat of which ended the French occupation of Vietnam, and then the U.S. went in there for years afterwards. And during, you know, today everybody, a lot of people are against the war in Vietnam today, but I remember when we used to demonstrate against it, there weren't that many people against the war in Vietnam, and that was because of the media, because the media was brainwashing the population that successfully, that people were willing to go to die themselves in a murderous war to kill other people. And all of the motivations for that came not from their material interests, it came from the distortions and lies of the media. And that's what we have going on, although it's reached, I think, now a point where it has gone on through so many cycles and so many aspects that everybody knows today, maybe not everybody, but a growing number of people suspect that they're being lied to. Of course, they correctly suspect it, but the lies have become more and more internally absurd and self-contradictory to the point where there's a certain despair, whereas people used to look for the media to learn the facts. Now the facts are looked at in a certain way as, in a cynical way, as being unknowable, or maybe there's no such thing as facts. It's like one of those existential plays.
Let me cut into you there. That was a fantastic lesson. History lesson that tied things up. And we're going to ask Ann to come in and close the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening in, because our problem or our solution is free our political prisoners and to get educated. Ann, your mic is open.
Okay. I'm going to read a very short excerpt from Albert's book, if I can find it again, because I just had it there and it disappeared. hold on a sec. I went to go click on the tab and it went away.
We'll pick it up next weekend. Thank everyone. We'll open with it next week. Everyone, thank you for listening in, and I hope you listening.
To be free.